This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Live and Learn with me, Lim Soo Ann. Now, if you were asked to picture a museum, you know, what comes to mind? Many of us might think of beautiful buildings that are housing artifacts or items that are important for a particular culture or from a point in time. But, you know, what makes a museum, especially when these days, we see the term being used quite liberally sometimes. So, you know, in conjunction with International Museum Day, which is celebrated on the 18th of May every year, today I'm speaking to Simon Soon, a senior lecturer in art history at University of Malaya, and also Lee Yuen Tian, manager of the Baba and Nyonya Heritage Museum in Malacca. And I want to get both their perspectives on what they think the role of museums are in society today, you know, how Baba and Nyonya Heritage Museum has been affected by the COVID-19 pandemic, and also explore what the future holds for museums, especially in Malaysia. Thanks for joining me today, both of you.
No, thanks for having us, Suan.
Yes, yep.
Simon, perhaps I'll start with you, right? From your perspective, you know, what makes a museum?
Okay, I'm going to go about this in a roundabout way. So this the full scene from the classic New Wave film, Bonaparte, right? Band of Outsiders by Jean-Luc Godard, showing three young friends whizzing across the Louvre Museum in 9 minutes and 43 seconds to knock off like an older record. So as they were doing so, you know, Godard captures them in three sweeping panoramics. And in these panoramics, we get a glimpse of all the famous works that are in the museum. So David's Hope of the Horaki, the Wings, Victory of Samothrace. So all of this, I think, suggests to me, for me, what makes a museum is not so much in... It's not something that you find in the museum's purpose, but in the joyful way the public has always created meaning out of such cultural space for themselves. And having these three youngsters, you know, whiz past the exhibition hall, I think it's a reflection of that kind of energy, right? So in a way, Godard is saying, like, you don't abandon history, you zip through it, and yet absorbing everything, yet dismissing everything at the same time is inconsequential. And ultimately, emerging out of it, you know, with a claim that you have some kind of, you're an inheritor of this cultural history. So for me, what makes a museum are the ways people create meaning out of narratives that encounter within the museum itself. That for me is the wonder.
Tian, you know, you come from the perspective of, and you have the experience of running a museum, right? What does the what does the museum mean to you? And tell us more about the Baba and Nyonya Heritage Museum that you manage.
Well, personally, to me, the museum would be a space for us to actually share knowledge. Where, if you know, I like to visit museums when I travel, so it is something that I would like to experience and also to see things about that particular nation or that particular community. Yeah, people like to say that museums only display things that are old. Or antiquities, yeah. But I won't see it like that. But I would think that museum would be a testimony of how life is at that particular country or of that particular community. Yeah, so I find it very interesting to visit museums, yeah, mainly to know more about a nation, its history, and you know, and the people, basically. Yeah, and myself running the Baba Nyonya Museum is quite new to me. You know, I'm just being a manager there for about 5-6 years, and then the museum is quite old actually. It was opened up in the year 1985, and then it is originally a house of Baba Chan Cheng Siu, and then the descendants decided to open up their ancestral home into a museum, mainly to share about the Baba and Nyonya, so that more people would know about who are the Baba and Nyonya, and then to understand better this minority group of people in the museum. So what you see in the museum is not really a display of artifacts, but it's more like house, because we try to preserve the museum as how the family members would have lived in at that point of time. And then when people walk into the museum, they can have this experience of, oh, okay, this is how, you know, life used to be. And then they would understand better about the Baba Nyonya community as they experience the whole visit.
I saw on your website that it describes the museum as a house museum, and I guess that's what you're trying to pass on to the people, right? Giving them that experience of what it's like to live in a Baba Nyonya house.
Yes.
You know, what would you say are sort of the best or most unique parts of the museum?
Well, if you ask me to pick one, I would not say that there's one particular one, because the whole house is very unique. But from, you know, what I've heard of people saying, they are very amazed with the staircase of the museum, where, you know, if you look at it, there is carvings and even gold gleaming on the underside of the staircase, which you don't normally see in any houses. Yeah, especially in modern homes, you don't even see staircase like that, where you have, you know, carvings everywhere, even on the underside, finished with gold leaf. And then also another part of the house which people find most interesting is the peephole on the first floor in the master's chamber, where you actually have a peephole that gives you the view of the main entrance, where people in the past treat it like a CCTV, you know, you would just peep, see who is, you know, knocking on the door, and then whether or not you want to receive these guests. Yeah, that is something that, you know, when we explain or when we, you know, highlight it to the visitors, they would say, "Oh, that's interesting."
I mean, it's interesting because these are so many parts of the culture that we've sort of, it seems so normal, but I think a lot of us have sort of forgotten about it also, right? Like these are not really anything. These are just normal part of everyday life for people back then.
Yes.
Tian, in your case, you've mentioned that the museum is sort of it's not sort of displaying artifacts from the Peranakan culture, but it's showing people what it was like to live in a house back then. But is the museum important towards preserving your culture for you and your community?
Well, I think it is a very important tool for us, the Baba Nyonya community, of course, to somehow, you know, it is like a testimony of our past, yeah. And then to preserve this museum is like, you know, having this kept in a time capsule where our future generation can always visit the museum and know that, okay, this is what or how Baba Nyonya House used to be like. Yeah, during the golden age of the Baba Nyonya community. And then it is also very important to have museum such as the Baba Nyonya Heritage Museum, so that people would continue to experience the Peranakan experience, rather than just visiting, okay, this is a vase, that is a chair, that is an antique plate. But then to know how it is put to use, that is very important, and to see it, you know, or else it would just be another display that you can just read from books or stuff like that. But to have a house museum like the Baba Nyonya Heritage Museum is very important, so that people would actually experience it rather than just see it. You know, they would get the chance to feel how you know, the Peranakans lived a long time ago, or about 100 years ago.
And Simon, what about from your perspective, you know, why are museums important, especially in terms of preserving culture and heritage?
I like to bring up sort of this curator by the name of Tom Harrison, who was appointed, you know, curator at the Sarawak Museum in after the war, right? So he wrote a series of very interesting articles that I think are worth visiting, because he comes from a sociology background, and it's quite perceptive things to say about institutional culture. So on the function of museums, or why museums are important, he gave a rather stock reply. So he said, first of all, you know, one of the functions is that the museum exhibition is mainly aesthetic. It serves educational and entertaining purposes. And then second, that it it is a form of research collection, so it facilitates scientific and informational research. However, then he suggests that museums are also what he calls two-way breathing in and out affair. And the comment was, in a sense, hinting at the ideals of the museum beyond its function, right? And he points out that only in museum and library can you really enter and wander freely anywhere and all day. And in a way, I think this connects to the museum to its original Greek meaning, right, as a temple of the muses. So it's a space to seek out inspiration and knowledge. And at the same time, I think Harrison was also being quite prescriptive and perceptive, aware that maybe there's a growing nationalist movement in Sarawak at that time and very sympathetic towards it. And on this note, then he suggests that museums, when it collects artifacts of different cultures and communities, it also plays a role to bring people together to understand each other better, where sections of each community can find out more about one another and about Sarawak as a whole. So I think this is a very progressive statement made in 1947. You know, this is 20 years before Echo Museum sparked off the whole global initiative for museum to rethink the museum's role within a local society. All of this shared many of Harrison's concerns. So my sense is, if we want to better understand the role of museums or its importance, maybe it's not so much adopting the latest guideline or recommendations issued by the International Council. It is to do the hard and neglected work of building institutional memory. We forgot a lot that, you know, there's a lot of rich stories that are part of our museum's history as well.
Do you think that it's important for us to have more museums, you know, like the Baba Anyonya Heritage Museum, right, which are sort of very much based on the culture of the local community, because sort of we're expanding on what the community knows, right? We're teaching people about local cultures.
Yeah, sure. And I mean, the more the merrier, right? However, having said that, I'm sure Tian would be able to speak about, you know, the challenges even further. I don't think this is an easy task. But I think a lot of, in Malaysia at least, there's a sense that if it's a private enterprise, it's an individual's initiative rather than a group initiative or community initiative, initiated kind of like project. I wonder if there, you know, in trying to sort of like explore the community sort of like centered initiative, we might be able to create much more sustainable museums, especially small scale museums, given that this is a model that has, you know, been used widely in, for example, places like UK, where community museums are very much a part of the local town, you know, culture or fabric.
You know, what's it like for you, Tian, in managing the museum? You know, how is the local community, local Baba Anyonya community involved?
No, the museum is, like I mentioned just now, is privately owned by the Chan family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a family-based kind of museum.
Mm.
It's not so much of a community museum yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, you know, when it is privately owned, people will see the museum as a first and foremost business entity.
Mm.
Yeah, because we collect entrance fees and so on. Yeah, so the local community in Blacker, especially the Baba Anyonya community, they are not so much involved in setting up the museum and so on. But then they do like share with their friends, oh, you should visit when you are in Blacker. We have this Baba Anyonya Museum.
Mm.
Yeah, there is a sense of, you know, pride that they would say, oh, you should visit that museum, you know, to know more about our culture and stuff like that. But they are not directly involved in helping to set up the museum or contributing their artifacts or collection, because it is a family-owned museum. Yeah, they would say that, oh, you know, it is a privately owned museum, so they would not think that it would be appropriate for them to actually contribute their artifacts. And also the family would just keep to themselves, like, you know, okay, all the artifacts displayed in the museum are all belonging to Ching Siu at that point of time when he moved into the house in the year 1896. So all is inherited from that era. Maybe there are a few items that the local community actually started to loan to the museum when they see that now the Baba Nyonya Museum is taking a larger step to represent not just the family, but the whole Baba Nyonya community at home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then we do get the associations, the Baba Nyonya associations involvement to support the museum, especially in promoting the museum, yeah, for cultural preservation and also to spread awareness of the Baba Nyonya culture to the wider population so that people are aware of, okay, or there is this group of people, you know, living in Malacca and then, you know, living a very colourful lifestyle, a very much celebrated lifestyle.
We'll go for a very quick break now. I'm speaking to Simon Soon, Senior Lecturer in Art History at University Malaya, as well as Li Yuan Tian, Manager of the Baba and Nyonya Heritage Museum. I'm speaking to both of them today in conjunction with International Museum Day. We'll be right back after a short break. You're listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn with me, Lim Soo Ann. Joining me today on the line are Simon Soon, Senior Lecturer in Art History at University Malaya, as well as Li Yuan Tian, the Manager of the Baba and Nyonya Heritage Museum in Malacca. And I'm speaking to both of them today in conjunction with International Museum Day. We're talking about the role that museums play in society, and I also want to touch on, you know, how the museum scene has been affected by the pandemic, as well as how we can better cultivate interest in museums, especially among Malaysians. Now, on that note, Simon, do you find that Malaysians have that interest to visit museums? Because it seems like compared to other countries, you know, you see people regularly visiting museums on weekends, on public holidays. But here, locally, it doesn't seem like we have a very strong museum culture.
Right. It doesn't seem like that, right? And yet, I think if we were to run a survey, I'm quite positive that you're going to get very formulaic response coming from most people's lips that museums are important,
mm-hmm.
right? And every few years, you know, when you run these sort of like surveys, statistics will then validate what we want to hear. And it does show that actually there's an increase in visitorship mm-hmm. to the National Museum. So I was just looking at the open statistics. It's an open data. And if we only solely focus on the numbers, it's growing. It seems like it's, you know, a healthy growth. I think at least up to 2019 registered close to about 1 million visitors. It's not a substantial amount, but it does indicate that there's a growing community of visitors. So now the problem is that do we for one moment buy into these numbers? Rather than ask that if there's a way to foster such a culture, we could reframe the question a bit, right? What is it about our museums here that are worthy of being valued? When you ask this way, I feel maybe it becomes clearer whether, is it any wonder that the public isn't really that interested or invested in the museum? I mean, from young, perhaps they have been told that the museum's important. And so they repeat the rote statement that museums are important cultural spaces. But when push comes to shove, I don't think they really sort of like spend a lot of time engaging with the museum, maybe because our content hasn't been that rich. So we're very good at doing the kind of like, delivering the kind of information. But in turning those information into compelling stories, especially in a day and age where you're competing against Netflix, it's a tall order.
Tian, what from your experience, you know, who makes up the visitors to the museum? And I guess this would be pre-COVID, right? Did you see more Malaysians or foreign tourists coming in?
Well, if we were to just break the number of tourists based on foreigners or local Malaysians, foreigners make up quite a big portion of the visitors' arrival to the museum.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, in recent years, there is an increase in Malaysian visitors to the museum. Yeah, maybe one of the reasons is that it could be due to our ringgit value. So people don't really travel overseas. They do more domestic traveling. And then we see there is a rise in the numbers of local visitors to the museum.
I think, Tian, just to on to that, it does feel like there's also a growing sort of like interest amongst the younger generation to seriously engage with, you know, history and heritage, right? So change in attitude as well. And if it's not large, then at least it's a small growing pool of, a new generation of people who wants to sort of like, who are curious about art history.
Mm.
Yes, the young adults are the one who actually, patronize museums. Surprisingly, you do get like university students, they would actually come to the museum and to know more about the museum, especially among our local Malaysians, which is, it surprised me actually. I thought that they would find museums boring, but they are the ones who would pay that amount of money for the entrance fee and then make a point to actually come and visit. They actually come in groups, six, seven, maybe 10, up to 10 in a group that would actually come and visit museums. You'll be surprised that you do get this kind of age group that would actually be bothered to visit museums.
I think for me personally, I enjoy going to smaller local museums, at least the handful that I visited, because it's sort of, to me, it feels like it's filling in a gap because I can't find this information anywhere else, right? And visiting smaller museums sort of gives me that insight into our history, our culture that are sort of not found in our textbooks, for example. And I think maybe that's why you see that interest in younger people, because you see people, you see the younger generation wanting to know more about local stories and local perspectives. So then on that note, do you think then to cultivate better museum culture or more people wanting to go to museum, you have to tell more compelling stories through these smaller museums rather than having a large general museum with exhibits?
Well, I mean, there are two different types of institutions, right? The challenges of running a smaller museum is always like perennially it's a financial problem, and also like in terms of resources and manpower, how do you sort of like keep staffing so many small private museums? As a business model, I don't know if anyone has found the correct formula to make it sustainable and that it can be then shared with many different partners or players out there, so that we can really grow this small museum movement here in Malaysia. Whereas, I think national museums or government sort of like, does serve a purpose. It is encyclopedic, and in bringing different objects from different cultures together, one of the value that has is that it's teaching us to teach to think interculturally, not within cultural silos as well. I think that's also a very important dimension of our society that we have to be aware of and be curious about, alongside going deep into a particular cultural practice or a set of cultural practices.
Tian, Simon mentioned the challenges of running a small private museum. I mean, do those reflect what the museum has been going through?
Yes, of course. Yeah, because being a privately owned museum, firstly, like Simon mentioned, we got to think of how can the museum be sustainable. For example, we have overhead costs that we need to make sure that, we can cover all these overheads at the end of the month. Fortunately for the Baban Nyonya Museum, for being around for almost 30 over years, the museum is quite established now. And then we do have sufficient funding for us to run the museum generated through the entrance fee itself. Yeah. Thankfully, we have enough resources. So running that museum, Like Simon mentioned, this privately owned small museum, besides the costing, there are so many other challenges that we need to also consider. Like, for example, we need to get the right staff, the correct training, and then we have to impart the right knowledge to our staff so that they are aware, of what they speak, or for example, if they were to share a certain knowledge to people, we got to make sure that what they share is right. is not something that, you know, people say, hey, I went to the Papua New Guinea Museum and I heard they said this. Is it true? You know, things like that. Yeah. Or is it correct? What is on display there? Is it right? Do people actually live like that? You know, all these things you got to put into consideration. And then we cannot overgeneralize a certain culture. Like, for example, when people visit the Papua New Guinea Museum, we have to think about the, you know, what they bring home.
You want to make sure that you represent your culture correctly as well.
Correct. And then also we got to remind them, you know, to not overgeneralize that, oh, if you have been to the museum, you will know that the museum is an example of a prominent and affluent family of the Papua New Guinea community. Mm-hmm. So many people would be mistaken that, oh, Papua New Guineans are all very rich people.
Mm.
You know, all of them live like that. But that is not exactly the case.
Mm.
Yeah, so we only, you know, have to, I mean, what you see at the museum is just the example of the finest group of people from the Papua New Guinea community, but it's not representing the entire Papua New Guinea community. So things like this, you know, is very challenging for us to make sure that the right message that will be conveyed to the visitors, and then, you know, we would not misrepresent the community.
Mm. Is there a high cost to maintenance as well, considering that you want to preserve whatever items or the architecture of the building itself?
Yes, because like the house itself is already, we don't know exactly the actual age of the house,
mm-hmm.
because the only supporting documents that we have to show that the house belongs to the family from the year 1861. That was being bought over. But earlier, prior to that, we do not know or we do not have any supporting documents to show when exactly the house was built, because we know for sure that it was built during the Dutch period.
Mm.
So to maintain a building that is so old is actually very difficult. Yeah, we have termites problem.
Oh dear.
You know, and then we have this problem with the roof leaking.
Mm.
Not so much because the roof tiles is broken or what, because, you know, they use these old Dutch tiles that they just arrange on the roof. Yeah. So what happened is that there are actually monkeys that came over and then flip open the tiles to, you know, catch bugs or what for them to eat. Yeah. So sometimes when it rains, hey, how come it's leaking? So we have to send people to, you know, climb up to the roof and then rearrange the tiles that was being, you know.
Oh, so you only find out when it rains that there's a leak.
Yes. Because it's all just arranged like that. Yeah, so stuff like this. And then we have problems with our fabrics, because the museum is actually a house. It's not a really a museum. Mm. So it was not built as a museum. So mm-hmm. we don't have temperature control room. We don't even have a proper lighting to put fabric items on display. So, you know, throughout the years, we do notice that our fabrics are deteriorating, you know, so we have to change the lighting now. And then we get some experts to actually come in and advise us on how to prevent the fabrics from further damage. Yeah, so these are the challenges that we face in preserving the museum. And then, you know, it's a house, like I've mentioned to you.
Mm.
So it, from the floor to the ceiling, it's all artifacts. So you have every day about 150 people walking into your house, stepping on your tiles. You know, so sometimes we got some loose tiles here and there, so we have to glue them back. You know, things like this. Yeah, so it's quite a challenge to actually, because you can touch our displays. It's not like, you know, those regular museums that you actually walk in and everything is behind glass. But in our museum, it's very difficult. We allow people to step on our tiles.
Mm. There's, you know, a lot
there are
more
certain areas that people can. Yeah, it's more wear and tear kind of things. Even you tell people not to touch the artifacts, people tend to touch also.
I think that's the most challenging bit of museums, isn't it? If you tell people not to touch, there's that urge to touch things. Hence,
yes.
You need all the
and
glass.
Then you can't put everything behind glass. You see.
I mean, I imagine it can't have been easy for you guys over the past year. You know, Tian, you were telling me before the interview that you guys have been closed for most of the year.
Yes. We were closed since March last year. It's almost a year plus already now.
Mm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What were you doing in the meantime?
I still do go back to the museum twice a week just to do some maintenance work because, like I said, it's a house. So we got to maintain it very often. Yeah, especially because we have got 4 to 5 airwells in the house. Yeah, we actually have 5 airwells in the house. The kitchen area is actually very big. So if we don't go in and dust the place, sweep and, you know, wipe clean, by the time when we want to reopen, I think we have got to do major cleaning.
Are there plans to reopen as of now? Or, you know, I mean, I understand that it's probably very difficult to plan now, right? We have so much uncertainty. Yes. But sort of what's in the works for the museum?
We do have thoughts of reopening, actually, somewhere mid of this year. But then looking at the current scenario, I don't think we can open that soon, you know. So we have some plans to actually do a virtual experience for people to actually tour around the house for the time being. Yeah, but we are, you know, still planning on how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because like touring the house virtually would give people a different experience, I suppose. Like for example, you watch a documentary on a place of interest, but then it's nothing like, you know, going there and experience it for yourself.
Definitely.
So for the time being, yeah, maybe a virtual experience would be best for us to continue to run the museum. But then again, you know, we have to always weigh this whether or not it's worthwhile doing it. Of course, it would be a different experience, I believe. But at least, you know, there's something better than nothing.
What's your take on this, Simon? You know, I think, you know, we've seen so many parts of the arts and culture scene trying to go online, right? I think, and it's probably easier for certain fields than others. But do you think going digital is the future for museums? Or, you know, will we lose the novelty of visiting museums if we go down that route?
Yeah, no, thanks for that question. I mean, yeah, you know, I'm someone who's also always a bit suspicious that the experience of, you know, engaging with an object in person is an irreplaceable one, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, take the Mona Lisa and the Louvre, for example. Most who have gone there see it and thought they've, you know, beheld the real thing when actually what they're seeing is a replica in the first place. The rich work was never being shown. So a lot of it is psychological, I feel. Having said that, of course, you know, I'm lucky. I do count myself as being lucky enough to have the privilege to travel around. But I'm also a very strong believer in digitization.
Mm-hmm.
I always feel that this is a really good substitute. And if the experience may not be authentic to you, it doesn't mean it's not authentic for someone else, especially those who are not economically privileged enough to, you know, travel halfway across the world to look at a Poisson bowl or something like that. But I think the problem is always like when we think of the digital, we think of additional burdensome costs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the reason for this is because when we think of going digital, it's always been framed through a very technophilic lens, as if, you know, all our answers can be found simply by, you know, investing in this thing that is called technology or digital. Rather, I think we can be quite sort of like creative today. You know, there's so many platforms out there that are freewares, and there's a digital culture that is very generous, that's been sharing all these freewares, and there are communities that help you to understand and use all these programs. So if we see digital technology as more of a creative medium to help us to tell a story about a culture in another format, then perhaps we won't feel like, you know, it's just supplementary to the authentic work of, you know, running a museum as a space. you know, we can also think of space differently, because I think future generations will have a very different sort of like idea of what constitutes space, what constitutes authenticity. And the digital realm is a realm that they have lived most of their life on. So it's something that maybe we can, you know, think harder in how we want to sort of like play in this space and, you know, tell our stories in this space as well. And museums can thrive in the digital space.
So I'd also like to touch on the impact of social media. Tian, have you seen that has an impact mm-hmm. on people's awareness about the museum, for example, or how people talk about the museum?
Well, yes, because nowadays social media is a very important aspect in our lives, I would say. Yeah, everything that we do, you know, it would end up very quickly on social media. Mm-hmm. So when people visit museums, they would definitely like to share their experience using their social media. Unfortunately, in the past, mm-hmm. the Baba Nyonya Heritage Museum don't allow photography in the house. Yeah, so there has not been many postings about the museum on the social media platform. However, I think beginning 2019, we start to allow people to actually have their photographs taken in the house without flash. When people share, their group of people would create interest, yeah, among their group of friends and followers perhaps, and then that would also, you know, create more interest for them to actually visit the museum.
But do you think that perhaps it could also be beneficial to not have to not allow people to take photographs, right? Because then they are fully immersing themselves in that environment and not too focused on, you know, getting the perfect Instagram photo.
Yes, that was the initial thought, that, you know, when we first started, photography was prohibited, mainly because in the past they need to use cameras and then there's flash that, you know, involved, and then that flash would actually damage the artifacts.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't allow photography at the very beginning. But then again, now everybody actually carries a smartphone.
Mm-hmm.
Despite us telling them, you know, no photography, but we still see photographs of the museum being leaked. And we can see that they are, you know, all over the internet. And then we say, why not? We allow people to have photographs taken. Of course, we want them to have a better experience rather than, you know, busy posing for photographs. But then we have to accept that it is the current trend now that, you know, everything must be on Instagram. Mm. You know, people would tweet about the place or post it on their IGs, you know. So if this is something that the museum have to adjust and adapt to that concept. Mm. Yeah. Or else, you know, it's very hard for us to be relevant or to remain relevant. There are pros and cons to a certain extent.
Mm. Yeah. What's your take on this, Simon? Do you think it adds or takes away from the experience, the use of social media?
You know, I always feel like different people have different ways of experiencing it. I actually like to take photographs, not because, you know, I want to post it on social media or anything. In fact, I do that very seldomly, but I take it because I want a documentation.
Mm-hmm.
And it helped me to sort of like revisit that particular artifact that I want to look closely at a later point in time. Because sometimes when you're rushing through, you know, a tour itinerary, you won't actually have the time to engage with every mm-hmm. single object or every single thing that is of curiosity to you. So a photograph is a nice little extension that to help you to, you know, document it and save it for, you know, study and reflection later.
All right. You know, we've been speaking for a while, and I guess before we end, would each of you have some final thoughts to share about the future of museums, especially in Malaysia, or, you know, what would you like to see more of? Perhaps, Tian, I start with you.
Well, personally, for me, I guess when we can start to visit museums again, maybe one good thing that I hope Malaysians, you know, would start to actually visit museums, because sometimes when we have so many museums and then good museums and people don't really visit also, you know, there's no point of having a world-class museum and then there's no people actually walk in. Yeah, so yeah, perhaps with the growing number of people having interest in museum, I hope that it would, you know, the trend would keep growing.
Mm-hmm.
And then people would actually appreciate museum better and they would have a better perception of museum rather than, you know, just label museums as a boring place, you know, a place that just to look at old things, you know, people that goes to museums are all boring people. You know, we should change that mindset.
Simon?
Maybe I'm not so concerned that museums are going to sort of die out, but mm-hmm. I would like the nature of the museum to maybe change a little bit. And I always go back to Orhan Pamuk's sort of modest manifesto for a museum, right, that he crafted as a guideline as he was building his Museum of Innocence in Istanbul, where he suggests that, you know, his last point was the future of the museum is inside our own homes. And so when I think about this, I think of museums such as Penang House of Music, you know, the Indian Heritage Museum in Penang. I think of these spaces because the people who run these spaces run these spaces as their homes and they are proud about it. And I think Pamuk himself spells out, you know, what we need to do quite beautifully and that there's a gap that we must cross together. So rather than, you know, have epics, we need novels. Rather than have representation, we need expression. Rather than have histories, we need stories. Right? Rather than nations, we need to recognize the people who are in there. And if we want to sort of like encourage and engage and draw in a new sort of set of audience to marvel and to sort of like learn about our past through these museum spaces, I think museums have to offer these things, these sort of like compelling sort of like stories to draw them in, to enchant them, to make it worth their time.
All right. Thank you so much, both of you, for speaking to me today.
Thank you. Thanks, Suzanne.
Welcome.
To keep up with what's happening at the Baba and Nyonya Heritage Museum, you can look them up and follow their social media accounts on Instagram and Facebook. And, you know, hopefully when they reopen and the interstate travel ban is lifted, if you happen to be in Malacca, you can drop by and give them a visit and take a tour of the house museum. I've been speaking to Simon Soon, a senior lecturer in art history at University of Malaya, as well as Lee Yuen Tian, manager of the Baba and Nyonya Heritage Museum in Malacca for International Museum Day. If you missed any part of today's show or any previous Live and Learn interviews, you can look up the podcast on bfm.my or on the BFM app. You've been listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.